The first time that we are in a part two, we are continuing on a larger essay. The truth is we're not going to finish it today either, but I'm not sure that we'll necessarily continue it next week. We'll have to see. But in many ways, this is a direct continuation. On the other hand, as you shall see, and forgive me the fancy words, but it's a little bit of a dialectic, or in a certain sense, we're going to see a little bit of a contradiction, a little bit, between what he said last week and what he's going to emphasize this week. But I think the synthesis is really, I hope, will be evident, or at least I'll do my best to explain it, kafi my understanding. Just to review, the very powerful piece that I think we saw last week was what he had entitled, HaHechrech L'Kiyum HaMitzvos, or as Nike said, just do it. In other words, that there is a certain necessity, a certain feeling of obligation that one should have, what he referred to as the Toras Chaim. Just like we instinctively and experientially, it's confirmed, we understand why the biological needs of our life are necessary. We eat, we sleep, etc. So too, our neshama needs spirituality, needs Torah, needs other forms of avodas Hashem, just like biologically we need these other forms of experience. At the same time, he had said, he had this great line at the end of the first page that we saw last week. If you ask somebody, why do you do mitzvos? Well, the answer is because that's how I was raised. Would a person say, I eat because I saw my parents eat? Right? It sounds ridiculous. L'chora, it has to be much more than that. He says, if all you're doing is just mimicking what you saw in your parents' house, that's not a Toras Chaim. Obviously, he acknowledged that, you know, being raised in a certain way gives a person what he referred to as a hargashah tivit, hapshuta. It gives you a natural and instinctive chibur, a connection to Torah and mitzvos. But at the end of the day, he said, that's not supposed to be the ultimate obligation. And this is a good way, place to pick up with. We did see this, I believe, inside last week. But the best place to pick up with, which is a good segue to what he's going to do now, is the last paragraph that we saw last week. So if you have the PDF, it was the second page of the last one. I'm not sure, David, if that's also in the one you said that yesterday or not. Okay, so it's in last week's PDF, or in my version, Amud Nunbet. And I'm sorry if I wasn't clear, David, last night. That's really what we're picking up with, is after the three dots. But above the three dots is the last paragraph that we saw last week, and it's a perfect segue. So again, he's saying, you can't just be doing everything your whole life because my parents did. That's not vibrant. There's no vitality to that. Rather, you need independent reason. So, what is that independent reason to do mitzvos? Simple. Not so simple, but straightforward. Period. The reason you're doing it is because you know you have to, because you must. I feel if I didn't have religious parents, even if I wasn't raised in a religious or Jewish home, even if I'm not really enjoying it, not everything in life is enjoyable. Right? That was the end of the first section. And that's where the title of the whole chapter comes from. That a person has to realize that their neshama needs this, they're obligated in this, no less than their body needs to breathe, needs to eat, and needs to sleep. Okay, so with that background in mind, let's see now the new position, which will take us Amud Nun Bet and also Nun Gimel. So after the three dots, Bizmanenu. This is really very, I think, really interesting, very stimulating. This could be some good table discussion as well over your Shabbos. Bizmanenu magdirim odam hamakayim mitzvos ki dati. I don't think he means this as opposed to Haredi. He is writing before those became politically loaded terms. But in general, what does it mean? It's more as opposed to Chiloni. What does it mean to be religious? We have the term dati. That's the term we use. It says, let's think about this for a second. Mahu hadati o datiut. What does it mean to have religion or to be religious? Be'etzem, hari ze koach mikochor ha-nefesh. There's a certain spiritual force, a power, an ability that everyone has. Zika le'elyon ha'elyonim. A certain natural spark, a pull, an attraction towards higher, more elevated things. Gonenet belev kol adam bari, says Ravolbi, that instinct, that zika to something higher, is stirring in the heart of any healthy person. Right? You're born with that. It's a gift. It's part of the chelek elokam imal. We have something inside of us. A certain stirring, a certain attraction, a certain magnetism towards something spiritual, something elevated. But here's the key, and here's the pivot. However, a person has two choices. Yachal ha'adam l'tapeach zikazu. On the one hand, a person could foster, could develop that instinctive attraction, in which case, az hu shuel ratzmo, he'll ask himself, ketzet yitkarev elyon, how do I get closer to that ultimate source? Ketzet yitain bitui lakarat tovato klapav. I feel natural appreciation to Hashem for everything that He's done for me. How do I get closer to Him? How do I express my appreciation? In other words, you can, by series of not only actions, but even just thought, steps of thought, a person can take what is a naturally undefined and unharnessed spiritual instinct and mechavein it, madrich it, bring it towards really inspired avodat Hashem. That's on the one hand. However, on the other hand, a person who has the same spiritual instinct, yachal adam lahazniach zikazu ulitalei mimena. A person could ignore it, could abandon it, and could leave it, so to speak, to wither. But here is something so fascinating, he says, and I think it really it strikes a chord in me. Azhi mitgalgelet v'holechet mi'inyan l'inyan. What happens if you don't develop this natural zika and turn it into avodas Hashem? What happens to it if you don't take it in the right direction? So what I would have expected he was going to say is, if you don't water the plant, it'll die. You don't give it oxygen, it'll wither, it'll die. It's not what he says. Rather, he says, in fact, it is there. It cannot die. If you don't take it and bring it in the direction of Avodat Hashem, of Shmiras HaMitzvos, then it's going to wander around, like kind of a drunken blind man kind of looking around. But it's going to look for something else, another way. It's going to then try to find other expression in other ways of life. A person is all of a sudden going to be a real nature person, right? I'm one with nature. I'm part of something bigger. You know that, or you become very much a social activist. You take a certain secular value and you elevate that into a religion. Does it sound familiar to a world that any of us are familiar with? You could, and he points out he's not negative always or cynical. Says Rav Volbi, he's not just being mezalzel in everything secular. He's not being there are certain elevated secular values that are ra'oi laharacha, kemo chayrut, freedom, right? That's an important value. Moledet, right? People have patriotism, shivyon, equality, tzedek, justice. These are all, he's not being mezalzel in any of those things. But it's not avodas Hashem. It's not the erech ha-elyon. And if a person does not bring his natural spiritual instincts into a form of avodas Hashem, it's naturally going to look for something else. V'gam ze einu ela tachlif l'erech ha-elyon ha-amiti. You have to realize, and this is to me, it was like such a striking observation. Right? How come so many people adopt so many Jews are at the forefront of all of these social movements, very often leading to good things in life, and very often leading to horrible destruction. Right? See communism, see socialism, see all sorts of isms. But it comes from a good place. They have a spiritual instinct, but since it wasn't harnessed towards genuine spirituality, it looked for something else. But we have to realize it was a mistake. And as we're going to daven tomorrow, so when you're hopefully you're fully awake, but when you're getting to the end of Pesukei Zimra and you say Ein Ke'erchecha Hashem Elokeinu Ba'olam Hazeh, right? I'm not going to sing it for you. I'm not a chazan. Okay, I really won't. What are we saying? There is nothing, right? There are all sorts of, you know, there's nothing that's a substitute. There are things which are pale comparisons, diluted, and distorted comparisons. But in the end, Ein Ke'erchecha Hashem Elokeinu Ba'olam Hazeh. That is the ultimate. That is the ultimate value. I think this is incredible. So let's just, I have a lot to say on this, but let's just read the beginning of the next paragraph. Me'ata navin, ki ta'ut hi l'krol adam ha-shomer mitzvot dati. I don't think he means this politically. But he says philosophically, he thinks it's a bad phrase. Okay, because given how he's defined it, therefore he doesn't like it. Because from his perspective, the word dati is only about potential. It does not in any way express, you know, that doesn't mean shomer mitzvot. That does not mean avodat Hashem. Dati is a spiritual instinct, the natural attraction towards something elevated, towards something inspiring, something bigger than ourselves. That is dati. But that's parv. That can go in a good direction, or in many, many different parv directions, or in some cases, unfortunately, very negative directions. Because that his I mean, what would he prefer? You're saying He doesn't give us a term that he prefers. He doesn't give us an alternative.
So as that,
I think he's just saying that that's the term that's used in society. I think he's right. We refer to religious people as datim. We don't refer to them as ruchaniim. Yeah. Now he's more of a spiritual revival movement. I don't know. I would love to have heard what Rav Volpe would have thought about New Chassidus. I'm not going to pretend to guess. I'm just saying I would have liked to have heard. Anyway. He says, in the end of the day, yeshnan rak bnei adam hanotnim lekoch zeh noven. Right? Some people allow this to develop, and some people allow it to degenerate. Okay. Now he's going to get on to another point in a minute, so I want to stop here. I just want to make the following observation again. Personally, I find this to be very, very compelling. And if you think about it for a second, you might have a question. Well, what about all the secular people? One of the things I think that we've seen, because it's not true about everybody, there's never going to be a theory or a rule that's true about everybody, but one of the things that I think we've seen in recent years, very recent years, at least again, this is my opinion, is that in many of the secular, completely secular values have themselves been turned into a religion. I mean, you see, you know, many of the characteristics of religion, blind faith, the desire to cast out non-believers and to condemn people who don't agree with you, all sorts of things which are not necessarily always the best parts of religion, but very characteristic of religions throughout history, right? Right? And I can't remember who, but somebody very wise, said, and they weren't reading Rav Volpe when they said it, people need to believe in something. And if they don't believe in God, it doesn't mean they don't believe. It just means they're going to turn something else into their God. This is exactly what he's saying. Again, it comes from a good place. People have that natural, what he called stirring, that zika, a desire, attraction to something. But if it's not Torah, if it's not something that's genuine, it's just going to go to something, which in and of itself might be not a bad thing. Justice, a person who's a justice warrior, again, a lot of times the justice warriors do a lot of injustice. That's not the topic at all for this year. But whether it's genuine justice, genuine freedom, these could be good things. But if they're not given... Anyway, it reminded me of an incredible story. This paragraph, I heard it personally from Rabbi Riskin, who described how decades ago, when Rabbi Grossman from Migdal HaEmek visited the Upper West Side, way before Rabbi Riskin moved to Israel, before he founded Efrat, this is decades ago. And it was on a Friday night. He says, let's walk around. And he says, in those days, there was a disco. I don't think this is where he got the name, the disco rabbi, from. I assume that was the discos of Migdal HaEmek that he used to visit. But this is a mamash story. Maybe that's why they went. Anyway, in that neighborhood, said Rabbi Riskin, there was a disco or a bar or something that was actually very popular with Yordim, with Israeli secularists who had moved to America. And of course, Rabbi Riskin had never walked in, because what Orthodox rabbi would go into that anytime, let alone on a Friday night? And Rav Grossman says, Adarabba, let's go in. So he says they walked in. Before they walked in, they're looking through the window, and everyone, there's music and people are dancing. So he says to Rabbi Riskin, "What do you see?" So Riskin knows this is a trick question. He doesn't want to answer it. Whatever he's going to say, there's obviously something that he's not seeing. So he said that the Rabbi Grossman said to him, "You think you see all these people that are dancing? You think you see lots of young people who are alive." He said, if you had a fly and you put a cup over it on the table, what would happen initially? It would be bouncing off the walls, full of movement. Is that because it's alive? It's dying. It's grasping for oxygen. And that's what he says, these are Jewish neshamas. They look alive. They're looking for something. But since they haven't found the right thing, they've turned other things, which is really just the Sam Hamaves, they just don't realize it. They think they're alive. They think they're chasing the gold. But in fact, they're chasing something, unfortunately, very, very different. And again, that and the very fact that you just look around and there's, every ism is led by Jews. And again, a lot of them from very good place, well-meaning. But unfortunately, this is his... intellectual understanding of why there's a problem with that. Let's continue, and we'll see one more point that he makes today, which I think is the Kosov HaShlishi. Because then, you put this all together with what he had said last week, about what it means to be alive, not just do things for your parents' sake. So he says, he continues, and he says, if you look a little bit in the middle of the paragraph, why should a person do all this? He says, don't think that the Torah is just a pulchan hanotein bitui l'regesh dati. You might think, listen, you need some framework. So the Torah is just some ceremonial framework how to give expression to my natural spiritual stirrings. Says, it's not that at all. Or that's totally underselling. You're cheapening Torah. Mimino esh das lomo. Kibalno osa mimarom Torah min ha-shamayim v'zeh mechayev otonu l'kayim kol mitzvos. In other words, why are we doing it? Not just because we need some ritual and, you know, the isms pick that those rituals and we pick this ritual. Rather, sibas hachiyav eino hakoach hadatiya shebekirbeinu. We're not doing mitzvahs because we need some expression of our spirituality, so let's give it some function and give it some expression. Ela, hahitgalut bahar Sinai. At the end of the day, you know why we're doing it? Because it's true. Because this is what Hashem wants us to do. He explains, again, for the sake of time, I won't read it all inside. In the continuation of the paragraph, he explains that En Hachinami, left to our own device, we do need something. It does have a benefit. It does translate our natural stirrings. But it's inconceivable, he says, that a human being could have come up with the kelim to give proper expression to something which is... It's like, you know, if you took something that only could take 110 voltage and you put it into 220, you know, when that used to happen, now thank God that doesn't happen so much anymore. But, you know, when we were younger, right, anytime you ever came to visit Israel, you were, you know, at least one of your electronic devices wasn't coming back with you, right, because you were going to blow it, you know, right? Too much electricity. Says, the only reason why these are the right things to do and these are the right expressions to give, you know, expression to this incredibly high voltage that we have internally is because it came from Hashem. It came from Sinai, because it's true. And if you look at the end of the paragraph, this is so powerful. If we can internalize this, I'm not saying it's easy to do, I'm not saying I do it, but if we can internalize this, it would change every mitzvah we do, he says. U'b'chol mitzvah, last two lines of the paragraph. U'b'chol mitzvah, sh'anu osim, every time we do a mitzvah. Not just, at the end of Yom Kippur where we're screaming at Hashem Elohim. And not just when you do some heroic act of chesed. And not just when you had the best daf yomi you ever had. Every mitzvah, chol mitzvah shanu osim, anu vatim shanu ne'emanim lihitgalut b'Sinai. Every mitzvah is an act of faith. It's an expression of, again, if you're doing it just because you think it's a nice thing to do, then maybe it's not. But if you're doing it because this is the tzivui Hashem, if you're doing this because I know Hashem commanded us to do this, then every mitzvah is an act of belief in Har Sinai. U'b'chol dvar Torah shanu lomdim, every time we learn Torah, hinu lomdim es dvar Hashem mihar Sinai. A leinu. If we see ourselves as commanded, we see ourselves as Hashem speaking to us, in almost as literal a sense as we can imagine it, every time we do a mitzvah, every time we learn, every time we have a shir, every time we do anything, it could be chesed, anything, if we're doing it, not just because it's a nice thing to do, not just because it makes us feel good, not just because it gives expression to the stirrings of our soul, but because it's right, because Hashem told us to do it. That changes everything. It completely transforms that. Chiyuv zeh shel Torah v'mitzvos miSinai makif et kol am Yisrael b'chol makom b'chol dor. There's no exception to this. We're all obligated in this. Ish lo ne'edar. Rak l'meisim chofshi. Zulas ha'meisim en af echad chofshi mikim ha'mitzvos. We are obligated. Yes, it does give natural expression and beautiful expression to the stirrings of our soul. Yes, it can be a beautiful life. Yes, all of those things. But none of those can be the... Something has to be the terra firma. Something has to be the tashtit. Something has to be the basis. You could build many layers on top of it. It's beautiful, and it's good family life, and it's good to marry a Jewish man because he's going to... Jewish husbands treat their wife. All of the benefits. There are a lot of benefits to people who have Torah values. They're not always there, unfortunately, but there are a lot of benefits to Jewish life, and a lot of benefits to religious life, spiritually and otherwise. But that's not the tashtit, says Revolbi. The ikkar is... That has to be true. And I'm just going to conclude with one last thing. I'll just paraphrase him. If you have, this is, I guess, the next PDF, if you want to turn to the next page. He quotes a Ramban, a very famous Ramban. The Ramban is talking about the Pasuk in Ve'eschanon. He sharmel l'cho shmur nafshcha me'od pen tishka chesedvar mashir ro'u einecha u'pen yisrul mi'lavavcha koy mechayecha v'odatan livenecha, etc., etc. The Pasuk seems to tell us, don't forget about Har Sinai. Is that a narrative Pasuk or a tzivui? So the Pashup Shad is just Sipur Dvarim. Lots of things in the Torah are beautiful, agadata, if you will, narrative. Says the Ramban very famously, that's a tzivui. The Ramban holds there's a mitzvah, midoraisa, not to forget what happened at Sinai. Lefi dati mitzvahs losa say hizir ma'od. Lizkor me'ayin bo eilecha mitzvos. Shlo tishkach ma'amad ar Sinai mikol dvar mitzvah ruwe necha, etc., etc. That's a shita of the Ramban. Not everyone agrees to that. He holds there's a lo tase, you cannot forget. So it's a mitzvah zachor. In the Losa says, you cannot forget that we experienced Sinai. And here's the key point, and this is the last thing we'll see inside. At the end of the still reading the Ramban. Kishenatik gam ken hadavar levenenu. It's not just that we have to believe it ourselves, we have to then give it over to our children. This is our responsibility as parents. Yedu shahe hadavar emes, belief safek. That will give our children firm belief. Kilu ra'uhu called ours, as if every single person was there. We saw it. And here's the key point, very famous line of the Ramban. Kilo na'id sheker levenenu. If a person grows up with a healthy, and this is why being having a good relationship with your children is so important. Because a human instinct, if you have a loving, trusting parent, then instinctively you would never imagine, they would never lie to me. My parents would never do anything to hurt me. Lo nai checker levanenu. Lo nanchilo sam davar hevel. Ein bam moil. So if we, again, I think that starts with having a good relationship with a parent. But in a normal good relationship with a parent, instinctively a child feels strongly, my parent would never lie to me. So if my parents telling me that Hashem gave us the Torah at Sinai, now this is a very famous idea of the Ramban, and the Rav Volbi is very excited about this in the next paragraph. Lo noid sheker levanenu, einenu zekukim l'rayos mufshatot al emunateinu. If we really, really would believe this, and this is a variation of the famous Kuzari proof, right, about the belief in Sinai, and people, you didn't have just too many people all of a sudden perpetrate a fraud on each other. How could it have happened? Again, from a strictly philosophical perspective, from a strictly philosophical perspective, many scholars over the last hundreds of years have pointed out the Kuzari proof may not be the greatest proof with the capital P. There are philosophical, all sorts of holes you could punch in that. And I think that may be fine. But if a person is blessed, not everyone was blessed, if a person is blessed to have grown up in a loving home, and if you add a loving and religious home, then I think instinctively and emotionally, this is actually a very, very compelling argument. Not just that it's a beautiful life, but that that there's a certain true life. And I'll end you, if you'll indulge me 2 more seconds, you'll appreciate this. A great story. At the end of in between my first and second years learning in yeshiva, I interned in Eisha Torah to help with their Hebrew youth students. And very popular in those days in Eisha Torah were the Bible codes. And every 4 pages of the Chumash, if you look at the third letter under the second word, it spells out Saddam Hussein. Right, and that's right in the parsha of Amalek, or something like that. A certain percentage of the population found these things amazing and wow. And many other people, particularly people who knew math and statistics, felt that this was not remotely compelling and maybe even disingenuous, and you could do the same thing in any other big book, and v'chule, v'chule, v'chule. I barely got through calculus. I had no independent opinion mathematically. But it left me cold. It left me cold. Like, this is Yiddishkeit. A bunch of codes. That's why I'm keeping the mitzvahs, because if you look in the parsha of Didana. So at the end of my internship, I got to meet Rav Noach Weinberg, the great legendary founder of Eishet Torah. So I asked him this question. I said, I'm not here to get into the whole shiloh with the mathematicians and the statisticians. Is this really an honest and genuine way approach? I said, but this is what you want to convince some Hebrew youth student, give up your secular life, come to put on a yarmulke, learn in Eishet Torah, because so he said to me something very powerful. He said, it reminds me of this Ramban and this Rav Volbi. He says, if I were to come to you right now, say, guess what, there's this new thing we invented, it's called DNA. If you just give me 30 seconds of your time, I'm going to take a little blood. And in a few weeks, I'll let you know if your parents are really your parents. And sure enough, he comes back a few months later and says, guess what, good news, your Abba is really your Abba. Your mom, look. Is that what? He said, would that make any impact? I said, it would have zero impact on me. Not 1%, not 2%, it would have zero impact on my relationship with my parents. I don't have any doubt anyway. He says, but now imagine you grew up adopted. You never met your biological parents. And I knock on your door and I say, guess what? We think we found your parents somewhere in Illinois. Give me 30 seconds, I'll take some blood, I'll be back in a few weeks, and I'll let you know one way or the other. And I knock on your door 3 weeks later and say, guess what? We found your mother. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Could you compare? He said to me, you were lucky. You know your parents. So you don't need the DNA test. You don't need the codes. Because you grew up on a Shabbos table. You grew up in a loving home. That's all the truth you needed. He didn't quote this, but what he was really saying is, Lo noyed sheker levanenu. You grew up with it. That's more powerful than anything you could ever have. But if someone didn't grow up with it, Nebuchadnezzar grew up secular, they never had a parent who they trust and love, who gave them also, not only, a good childhood, but also Torah mitzvos. So what's going to get them to even open the door to give them a chance? Why would you think some random woman in Illinois is your mother? Oh, but there's a DNA test that says she is. Now, if you don't think the codes were a good DNA test, then it became a problem. But he says, but if you want to know why I'm doing this, I was totally blown away by that answer. I thought it made a lot of sense. So for those of us who were blessed with this, it really, I think, it gives us appreciation for Avolbi saying. There is a certain, you know, again, I hate to use, I don't want to try to use fancy philosophical words, but there's a certain dialectic, which means, you know, two things which are coexisting, even though they seem to be opposite. On the one hand, he was saying, especially last week, we don't do things just because our parents did them. You eat only because your dad ate? That's ridiculous. On the other hand, what I think he's saying, and I think this is the synthesis of the two, is that you do it because you feel in your kishkas it's the right thing to do. But how did you know it was the right thing to do? The best proof, better than any other proof, is if you were lucky enough, not everyone was lucky enough, but if you were lucky enough to have seen it with your parents. And whether we were lucky enough as children, so as parents and grandparents, this is a tremendous mechayev on us to our children. Good job.